This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as the mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to pursues, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay. Okay. All collected. Excellent. Let's just talk a little bit about meditation first of all, before we start the actual trying it out afterwards. Of course, always meditation practice is really about sitting back and just enjoying the ride. But of course, always with meditation, there's always some obstacles and problems in the way. And it is obstacles and problems that we really need to talk about, how to overcome these things. And two of the main obstacles in meditation practice is, on the one hand, you have like tiredness, yeah? You know that feeling sometimes, oh, I'm so tired. Many monks have exactly the same problem. I'm sure that monks have the same problem as well. It's kind of a very, very common thing here. And on the other hand, you have the restlessness, which is like the thinking mind. Ever had that before in meditation? Yes? Okay. Like, just like everyone else, yes? Everyone has these kind of problems. And so these are the two main issues that people deal with, and they are actually rooted in even deeper things. I'm not going to talk about those deeper things. I'm going to talk about these slightly more superficial things and how to deal with that. And tiredness really is the easiest one, because tiredness, you know, it usually comes about because you have been very busy. You know, I see people rushing in here in the last minute, like this racial coming in, rushing in. I don't know, I'm sure people are busy for Christmas or whatever. Anyhow, so of course, if you are rushing around all day doing all kinds of things, and when you finally sit down, it's pretty natural that you kind of start nodding if you're tired. Yeah, it's just natural. So what you have to do is you have to allow the tiredness to kind of look after itself. So you nod for a while, yeah, or you just kind of, you know, zonk out for a while, whatever it is. And then as you do that, you kind of, the energy comes back to the mind again after a while. So this is the dealing with the tiredness. And it's not, you know, it's just basically that's what you have to do. There is, you can do a little bit more than that, and one of the things that you can do is you can try to inspire yourself a little bit, because inspiration is almost the exact opposite of tiredness. If you feel inspired, you feel energetic, yeah, you don't have any tiredness when inspired. And inspiration comes from your attitude that you have in the present moment. So one of the things to inspire you, very simple thing here, is that when you come here to the armory group and you sit down, you close your eyes, you can actually almost like feel the positive atmosphere in the people around you, yeah? People are very polite, yeah? I come in, everyone stands up. I'm not used to that, nobody does that anywhere else. Very polite group, I'm really kind of really impressed. So yeah, it's really nice, positive atmosphere, yeah? Everyone is here to do something uplifting, something spiritual, something nice. And when you just tune into that, that already, and this is one of the reasons why people come together to meditate, yeah? Because it is a bit of an uplift. Try to do the same thing at home and you kind of feel even worse. But here you kind of have a little bit of extra energy because of that. So how you tune in and how you kind of think about the people around you, how you think about yourself is actually, or the Buddhist teaching, whatever it is, this is what gives you that extra buoyancy. And then you have some of the tiredness disappears because of that. But the hardest thing to overcome with meditation practice is usually the restless mind, the thinking mind. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how to overcome that, because at least you're not tired, but now you want to kind of find that middle way. The mind can just swing between tiredness and restlessness. It's very hard to find that middle way where you're just mindful and peaceful inside. So how can we do this? And one of the nice teachings of the Buddha, this is called the sutta called in Pali, it's called the Bad Ekaratta Sutta, it means something like the one auspicious night. And it means like how to have an auspicious night of meditation practice. And this is the classical sutta where the Buddha said, on the one hand, you have to let go of the past, you have to let go of the future, and when you got that, then you find the middle in between those two, which obviously is the present moment. Yeah. And what he says in there is very simple, but it's also quite profound, and you really need to understand this to be able to figure out how to overcome the thinking mind. And he says that the past is gone. Yeah, past is finished. So why think about it? Yeah, but this is, you can say that, but it doesn't really work. Yeah, so you have to kind of think about it properly, and then it starts to kind of kick in. It's going back regardless. So you have to develop these ideas, and when you develop them, and you think about it properly, so the past is gone, so there's no point in thinking about it. And the future hasn't yet arrived, so no point in thinking about that either. That's the Buddha's advice. Yeah, very simple, very kind of basic. But again, you have to kind of develop these ideas. And when you develop them, you give them a kind of degree of meaning. That's when they start to kind of kick in and actually have a certain power in your meditation practice. So how do we do this in practice? Now, one of the way that I sometimes use is I often try to remind myself what is really valuable in life. Now, one of the reasons why you start thinking about things is because you start to think about those things that you are attached to, things that you think are important to you, what you're going to do later on. I've got to remember that, yeah? And you think about that in the middle of your meditation practice. I've got to go do this, and things kind of come back to you. And the reason why these things come back to you in your meditation is because you prioritize these things. You give them value. These are the things that are really important to you in your life. And you will notice that these are the things that have to do with your kind of with your family, your work, whatever else that it is that you have to do in the world. And these are the things you give the highest priority, and that's why your mind, even when you're supposed to do meditation practice, it goes to these things. Yeah, we value the things in the world, and we don't value the spiritual life as much as we value the things in the world. So what we have to do is we have to kind of prioritize things in the right way. And we have to say that instead of doing your spiritual practice so that becomes something that you can use in your ordinary life, it means that you're putting your ordinary life higher, it's putting your spiritual practice below. You're going to use your spiritual practice to improve your ordinary life. instead of thinking like that, you should say that instead, I will use my ordinary life, my family life, my work or whatever it is, to support my spiritual practice. My spiritual practice will be number one priority, yeah? And the rest will actually be there to support that. If your ordinary life is number one priority, and you meditate so you can function better at work or whatever it is, then because the other thing is a higher priority, your mind will tend to go there whenever you think something needs to be sorted out, yeah? And this is the problem. If you prioritize your spiritual life, your meditation practice, all the other aspects of the path, of the Buddhist path, then you won't tend to think about it so much. Why? Because that is, you don't want to think so much about the ordinary life, because you know where your priorities are. It's quite a simple idea. So, and when you think about it, you will actually see that this actually makes eminent sense. Because take, for example, family life. Of course, this is where almost everyone has a fair degree of attachments, yeah, across the board. But family life, whether it is a relationship between husband and wife, or with your children, or with your parents, or extended family, or whatever it is only meaningful. It's not so much meaningful in itself, but it is the quality of that life that really matters. Yeah, it's when we have good relationships, when we are kind to each other, when we care for each other. That is when we have compassion for each other. That is when family life actually works out. And it's the same with work life. Work life is kind of meaningless in its own right. It's when we do it with a good heart, when we do it in the right way, not just to make money, not just to have a career, but beyond that, that is when everything gets meaning, not in its own right, but through how we deal with it, what kind of qualities we put into it. So you can see from this, it's actually the spiritual qualities, like kindness and caring and doing things in the right way, generosity, whatever it is, that is what gives meaning to everything else. The spiritual qualities are the highest. They are the priority. Everything else is subsumed under that. And when you start to think like this, then when you know that when you come to your meditation here in the Armada group, yeah, even if you only meditate once a week, that's already pretty good. The majority of people don't do that. You know, this is priority time. Now I'm doing meditation practice. Now I'm doing something that is really meaningful. Yeah, this what I'm doing here is actually the thing which develops my mind in a wholesome direction. Here's where I do something that actually gives life a larger purpose. Not all of these other things that are ephemeral, that eventually will have to disappear, that eventually will have, you know, one day your job will be gone, one day your family members will be gone as well. It's just the reality. But at least you can take that goodness of your heart with you into the future, regardless of what happens to everything else. So you know how to prioritize that. Put the spiritual life on top, and when you do that, you tend to have a more peaceful mind as a consequence. So this is the first little piece of advice. The second piece of advice, and this is a bit more radical, hope you're ready for this. I always feel a bit careful about this kind of, because Buddhism has a lot of kind of radical ideas, and sometimes what you have to do is you just have to listen to the ideas, and you have to decide whether they apply to you or not, whether they are suitable in your practice. Yeah, that's one of the things that you have to do. And for some people, it's not suitable. So if it's not suitable for you, just kind of tune out and forget about it. This is a small little trick that I like to use in my meditation practice. Just very briefly, and this has to do with what we in Buddhism have called the death contemplation. Yeah, we're all going to have to die one day. Some people don't like death contemplation, especially if you meditate. Sometimes people are depressed, for example. The last thing they want to hear about is death contemplation. So don't worry too much about this if it isn't right for you. But I want to say it because it is a very fundamental part of Buddhist practice. And we're all going to have to die one day. Now, when you die, when you are on your deathbed, at that point, you have no future in this world. The future is completely gone. And this is why sometimes when you see people on their deathbed, those people who are skilled, who have kind of practiced well during their life and who have lived well, they're often peaceful when they die. Have you seen that happen? People become very peaceful when they're about to pass away. I've seen that happen many times because they know, now I have no choice. I have to let go. I have no future anymore. Because I have no future, there's nothing to think about, nothing to be done. Let go of everything. But the point is that death, we never know when death will happen, sir. And if you want to be ready for the time when you actually die, yeah, because you don't know when death is going to happen, if you want to be ready, the only time to be ready for your death is now. There is no other time you can be ready. So if you have no future at the moment you die. It is actually, you can bring that into your meditation right now and say, right now, I have no future. And if you have no future, guess what happens? So just like the person who's dying, if you really have no future, there's nothing to think about very much. There's nothing more to be done. There's no kind of, there's no more dinners to prepare, there's no more things, entertainment to be enjoyed, there's no more work to be gone, there's no more family to look after. There's nothing more to be done. And when there's nothing more to be done, you become like the person on the deathbed. You tend to become peaceful because you have no future. Is that nice, not to have any future? I actually use this sometimes. I find it very powerful, because when I have no future, everything goes. I'm just sitting in my hut in the forest, and this is the end of my life right here. Actually, very beautiful, very peaceful. So use that. If you find it works, if it makes you peaceful, if you find it uncomfortable or whatever, please don't use it. But it's just one of those little tricks that I sometimes use. So for those of you who find it, it's just meant for those who find it useful, really. Okay, so let's try it in practice and see what happens then. Okay. Okay. Okay, so just start as always by closing your eyes. And one of the nice things about closing your eyes is that you can feel your body so much better. And you know roughly where you're at, whether you are a bit tense, not fully relaxed or whatever. Just take that time at the beginning, straight away, just to relax fully. So you feel really at ease, and you feel really good where you're sitting. And always with meditation practice, some of the most important things that we do happen right at the beginning. So if you get the beginning right, everything else tends to unfold quite naturally. So make sure you take a lot of time to start off with, just to relax and be at ease, and sort of allow things to fall into place by themselves. And as you allow things to settle down, just imagine that you are standing back. It's like you're watching a screen, and all the things around you, all the things outside, but also your thoughts and everything else is happening on a screen. You are just like the awareness who is watching things coming and going, noises and sounds and thoughts or whatever arising and passing away. And as you do this, you start to gain a bit of clarity about what is going on. can just try, if you can, to enjoy being that passenger on the train. It's as if you are on the train and you're looking out the window and you're seeing the things outside without controlling, without being involved. In exactly the same way, the meditation is about sitting back and just observing the phenomena coming and going without involvement, without judging, without saying what is right and wrong. that if you find that your mind is still a little bit active, try to remind yourself that the spiritual path, the spiritual life, this is what life really is about. This is what gives life meaning and purpose, and everything else is really subsidiary to this. This is everything in life only works because of the goodness of our hearts and the care that we put into things. This is what life ultimately really is about. Everything else supports what we're doing now. So don't think about those supporting conditions. Instead, allow the spiritual path to play out. and to give yourself a little bit more inspiration and joy in the meditation. Try to tune into something positive. One of the things about a group like this is just to feel that positive feeling of goodwill of all the people around you. All these people who try to practice and to live well. And what a wonderful thing it is to be part of a group such as this. To see if you can build up that positive feeling, the positive perception inside her. And that is what often gives extra oomph to the meditation practice. And if you are feeling reasonably peaceful and alert, this can be a good time to very gently start watching the breath and to do the breath meditation. But be very careful, because you don't want to control the breath. All you want to do is to stand back as if you are seeing the breath from a distance, as if you are seeing something that you have no control over, just allowing the breath to be and just having the awareness. So we're now getting very close to the end of the meditation. And before we come to the very end, I'd like to ask you to try to evaluate what has happened over the last half an hour or so. Try to understand the process. Try to understand those things that work and those things that don't work. So if you feel a bit more peaceful now than you did when you started, ask yourself why that is the case. Okay. Good, bad, or terrible? Is anyone?
Good.
Is it all right? Yeah. Okay. Great. I'm glad. Does anyone have any particular things they would like to talk about the meditation? Anything you want to say?
I'd like to hear more about your concept of taking kindness into the future. I think that's what you said.
Did I?
Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Kindness into the future. Yeah. Well, I think it's just if you have kindness in the present moment, you're always taking it into the future in a sense. You know, you build it up into the present moment, and from that you bring it into the future. I think this is what meditation in a large part is about. It's about kind of calming down and building up a good heart. And then when you do that, you bring that with you into your ordinary rest of your life. So that is really what... I don't think I actually said that, but anyway, it's a good... maybe I did, but I just can't remember. But I think the idea is... the idea makes sense, you know. That's what we all really... I think what we want to do, really, at the end of the day, is a large part what the spiritual path is about. So well done for coining a new term in Buddhism, taking kindness into the future. That's great. Anything else anyone want to ask about the meditation, or what doesn't work or what works? Please don't feel shy, because usually people have exactly the same problems. Yeah. So if you have a really stupid question, usually it's the one that everyone wants to hear about anyway. So. Everyone okay? Everyone, yeah. Sometimes people get very frightened of meditation. Some people have bad experience as well. Don't think that if you don't enjoy it, or for some reason it doesn't really work out. Actually, that is also quite common. Not common perhaps, but it happens to quite a lot of people. So fairly common. So that is also okay in a sense, and it's important to take that into account, because then you try to find ways of actually getting around that, so you don't have to have terrible experiences. The whole purpose of meditation is obviously to feel good, otherwise there's no point in doing this, just to feel better. So if you do feel bad, then you would try to find a way around these things. Yes?
Do you always have to have quiet
mind to do
meditation,
like sort of you know, not be stressed or
unsettled,
trying
to get into a right frame of mind before you sit down to do meditation?
Don't have to. I think the point really is that you want to try at the end of the meditation to feel better than when you started. That's really kind of the purpose. Very often it is about reducing kind of the noise, or reducing the amount of busyness in the mind, but it's not really about necessarily making it quiet. So it depends on what we mean by meditation practice. The Buddha had a very high standard for meditation, as you can imagine. So for him it was like the mind is really peaceful, you have clarity, and then you kind of watch the breath and you go into bliss afterwards. That's kind of the Buddha's idea. We don't expect it to be Buddhas, and it's not straight away, maybe after a while, after a few years, ideally, but not straight away.
No, I don't think it's about a quiet mind, but you sort of come to
calming yourself instead of before you start doing meditation?
Well, it's the calming itself and the settling is part of the meditation practice. That's how I would see it. So I would say, but I think if you mean like watching the breath, for example, as the actual meditation object, ideally you want to be settled and you want to have clarity before you start watching the breath, for example. Even if you want to do metta practice, and not many people like to do the loving kindness meditation, but it's good to have that clarity before you actually get into it, at least some degree of it. It's not going to be perfect. It's always about finding a balance between these things. And the reason is simply that if your mind is not clear and you want to watch the breath, you're going to have to use force to watch it. And if you use force, it's going to be uncomfortable, because the breath always wants to go away because your mind wants to think about things. But metta meditation, because sometimes it is a bit more active, you don't need the same kind of peace of mind sometimes. So if you just want to kind of wish all beings well and happiness, and yourself included, then actually you can do that without necessarily being completely still. But you want to try, as you know, to bring it fairly, make it fairly peaceful even before you do that. Yeah. Yes, sir.
When you said a particularly agitated day,
yeah,
should you then try and meditate, or should you then get to the point where you can just calm that thing up?
Yeah, I think that's an important question. If you are very agitated, remember the purpose here, what we're trying to do is trying to become more peaceful. And sometimes if you try to become peaceful and watch the breath or whatever it is straight away when the mind is really agitated, it actually gets worse because you have to actually use force to do it. So instead, go back home, put on some nice music that kind of calms you down. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Do something else, first of all, that makes you feel better. Go for a walk in the forest or whatever it is that you like to do. Something that makes you feel better. Yeah, go home, just coming back home, cook yourself some nice food, yeah, and then maybe the cooking activity maybe makes you relax a little bit, whatever it is that kind of you're into. And then when you feel that your mind is kind of a bit more settled, and you know that you are now in a, after a while you start to know what kind of mindset is going to work for meditation practice, and then you kind of go to the meditation. So try to be skillful about this and wise about this, getting the right process in there. So. Okay, good. So, yes, no, please. Yeah.
I was interested that you spoke about death, that in our society it's not very often talked about. I'm an old nurse, so I'm okay with it, etc. But I was very interested that nobody talks about it.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem, because I think if we talk about these things, they become less of a problem in our minds. If we just kind of try to sweep it under the carpet, it becomes worse. And I think all spiritual traditions, the idea of death is actually a very important one, because it puts life in perspective. And when you have perspective, it's much easier to prioritize in your life what actually matters and what doesn't matter. And this is the beautiful thing about it. And death contemplation, if done rightly, has so many benefits. Yeah, I know there's one man I met many years ago, and he told me that he was a psychologist. He told me that every morning when he left his house, he would remind himself, today I could die. I have to leave my house in a good way. So he made sure he kind of left his wife and his kids in a good way, and not after an argument or whatever. Because you don't want to die after an argument. Yeah, if you're on your deathbed, the last thing you're going to do on your deathbed is argue with people. You're going to kind of be relaxed. Yeah, you're not going to. That's the last thing. Yeah. And so death actually is a very useful for those people. Unless you feel kind of depressed or you have a particular problem with it or whatever it is, of course, then you don't do it. But I think for most people who have some interest in the spiritual path, death contemplation is very, very powerful. And it is one of the things the Buddha talks about a lot. So in Buddhism, it's a very important part of the teaching. So you can bring it into the, often death makes you feel peaceful. It can be very good to start out your meditation with a little bit of death contemplation if you find your mind is very busy. And then death often does not give you much inspiration. It can make you peaceful, but it doesn't give you the inspiration. So first of all, the death contemplation, and then afterwards a little bit of happiness, to feeling, wow, I'm on this wonderful path, path of peace, path of joy, and all these things. And you bring up some inspiration in your mind. And then you can maybe go to a meditation object like the breath or loving kindness or whatever. So indeed, yeah, I think these things are very important. And I like the idea of not having a future. I think maybe some people find that a bit kind of too much, not having a future, but I really like that idea, because I realize I never know when I'm going to die. Whatever, all the things that I think about tomorrow, they may actually never come come true. And one day it is going to be, it's going to be the case. Yeah. So in a very real sense, I don't really have a future, at least not in the long run. And the moment you don't have a future, there's nothing to worry about. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you think it should be serious, or is, does it matter?
Should it be?
Is it a serious business, or is it? Can you have a laugh about it?
About not having a future.
No, about dying. Right?
About dying, yeah.
I was listening to the life of Brian the other day.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah. No, of course, it shouldn't be too serious. It should make you peaceful. This is kind of the important thing. You can have a laugh about it as well, but it should be serious in the sense that it should be real. It shouldn't be kind of just a joke. If it becomes just a joke, of course, it doesn't work either. So you have to find that balance with it. But I think joking about death is great. It takes away some of the sting of death as well. If you joke about it and mess around a little bit, I think that's a good idea. So yeah, The Life of Brian is a classic. I think Adam Brown once said he had to watch The Life of Brian because it was like research for his talk or something like that. So yeah, anyway, you know what Adam Brown is like. Okay. So I can talk a little bit. So one of the what I thought of talking a little bit about tonight, and you are welcome to interrupt me if you wish, if you want to ask questions as I go along, and then I will kind of take a question when I think it's appropriate. But one of the things about the spiritual life is that we have to ensure that we kind of make progress on this path. Yeah, that's one of the important things. Very often people feel they stagnate, their meditation kind of comes to a certain point, it plateaus, it doesn't go any further, or they start developing good qualities, but actually then it kind of stops. You can't bring the mindfulness any higher, you can't bring the kindness beyond a certain level. Okay, so so this is one of those very important questions. It's one of the questions the Buddha also talks about in his discourses. And what the Buddha says is that what we should always look out for is whether we are growing in good qualities and whether we are declining in the negative qualities. Yeah. So by good qualities we mean things like mindfulness, the ability to be present in the be aware in the present moment, things like goodness of our heart, our ability to be compassionate, our ability to be understanding of other people, even the ability to have a little bit of wisdom. Yeah, all of these things are what we call positive qualities in Buddhism. And the thing that we should decline are things like anger, greed, confusion, and restlessness, these kind of things. Things that kind of take you away from peace, from happiness, and all of these other positive qualities. So what we should do, we should look over a certain period of time. Yeah, obviously not going to happen from one day to the next one, or even from one week to the next one. But over a few months, say 6 months or a year, you should be able to see a change. And if you see a change, if you see your mindfulness becoming more established, you find that you have more time for other people, you get less upset when others kind of do terrible things, which everyone always does, always somebody does some terrible things in life, you get less upset about that, and you are more patient and all of these kind of things, then you know you are on the right track. But again, make sure you give yourself a good time span, like from 1 6-month or from 1 year to the next one. And then if you see the development happening, then you know, yes, things are actually working for me. But if that isn't happening, that is when you have to ask yourself, what do I need to do? Yeah, that is kind of where the problem arises. So if you feel you are stagnating, you're not actually getting any more mindfulness, you don't feel like you're developing properly, you have to ask yourself why. So the question then is, what are some of the kind of strategies we can use to turn this around? And one of the things that you will notice is how you react to the world around you. Yeah, one of the things these are that people get very upset about, they look at the world, they feel the world is going down, going down the drain, there's all kinds of things happening in the world. You have some people don't like the politics that are happening, some people don't like, look like, as if our kind of climate change, all these kind of things are happening. Other people look at the refugee problems, all the people kind of, some people think there's too many refugees coming, other people look at the problem the refugees are having. There's all these things happening in the world, and right now we seem to be in a bit of a, at least some people think this, we're a bit of a turmoil and crisis. So what do you do in that particular context? Now one thing you can do is get depressed and sad, I think there's no future for my children and grandchildren, it's all going to go downhill from now on, and then you can commit suicide and you can kind of get out of it. That's not really a solution, it doesn't really work. So what you realize when there are problems in the world is that the problem really is that you have taken refuge in the wrong place. Yeah, this is such the Buddhist idea of taking refuge is a very important one. We all need places that we can go to, that we take refuge in, that give us support in life. That's why we have a spiritual path in the first place, to have something to support us. It's like a refuge. But very often we take refuge in the wrong things. We take refuge in the world. We expect the world to be in a certain way. We expect the political situation to work in a certain way. We expect the environment not to degrade too much. Yeah. Sometimes when you read this kind of terrible stories about kind of whales dying because they've ingested too much plastic, it kind of makes you despair a little bit about our world. But yes, you despair, but then you remind yourself, actually, the truth, of course, is ultimately, and this is really a very Buddhist perspective, these things are unreliable, they are impermanent, they're outside of our control. Yeah, but if you expect the world to be in a certain way, it is that expectation which is the problem. Yeah, the expectation that things will actually go according to certain standards or will be in a certain way. So instead of taking refuge in that world, which means expecting it to be in a certain way, you learn that the refuge has to be taken somewhere else. It has to be taken in your spiritual life, in your spiritual qualities. Yeah, so the world kind of matters less. It may obviously still matters a little bit, but it matters less because you're now turning inward. You're turning to those qualities that you actually can do something about, which are the qualities in your own mind. We have some degree of control of our own mind. We have almost zero control of what is happening in the world around us. So this is what we mean by taking refuge in the right place, by changing, moving around, and actually doing something with those things that we can do something about, and not worrying too much about the world around us, because it only leads to despair and negativity sometimes. One of the ways of looking at this, the Buddha, one of the wonderful things I like about the Buddha's teachings, that Buddha has a lot of similes and stories that he uses to kind of drive things home, yeah, some of these points home. And one of the Buddha's stories, or his similes, is a simile of a dream. He says the world is a bit like a dream. Yeah, the dream is this idea about what the world should be like. It's this idea about what our lives will be like. You know, remember when you were young, you kind of had an idea about the future, yeah? When I get to a certain age, I'm going to have a job like this, I'm going to have this kind of partner, I'm going to be married like this. I remember having those ideas, yeah, I'm going to be married like this. You can see how that turned out, yeah? It was very so this is the problem. We have these ideas about what the world should be like and what our lives should be like. And of course, the reality is often completely different from what we think it should be like. So this is part of the problem, and this is why taking refuge in that world is always going to be problematic, because it's always going to let you down ultimately. It's not going to go where you wanted to go. So find the refuge inside. Find the refuge in the kind of some spiritual teaching which gets you towards truth, gets you towards where things actually are at, and then there is a better chance that you will be able to kind of move beyond that and deal with the difficult things, like whatever is happening in the world around us. So this is the first thing. So this is how you deal with the world around you, and if you again use it skillfully, the difficult things in life, it actually gives you spiritual growth rather than despair and negativity. The second thing, which is very hard to deal with in life, is often other people. Yeah, have you noticed that? How difficult other people can be? Now, this is the biggest thing. Other people are, like, in some ways, the biggest joy in some ways, but also the biggest letdown. They have that kind of duality about them, which is very interesting here. So one of the... Always, when you have problem with someone, which always comes and goes all the time, it happens also in monastic life. Monastic life is not kind of absolute harmony every day either. It has kind of occasionally a few bumps in the road, even in monastic life. Whenever you have a problem, instead of getting upset about it, instead of getting angry, get angry a little bit, upset a little bit, but then you think, wait a minute, if there is a problem, there is an opportunity for spiritual growth here. Yeah, this is kind of the right way of thinking about these things. Why is that the case? And the reason is because whenever you get upset about what someone else is doing, what you are doing, you're getting upset about something that in the end you cannot really control that. There's always going to be people out there who are stupid. There's always going to be people who say things that you don't like, be problematic. So instead of actually blaming that situation, get angry and upset about something which really is uncontrollable, you ask yourself instead, how can I look at the situation in such a way that actually the problem is resolved in that sense instead? So instead of trying to change the world, which anger really is about, instead you try to change yourself and the way you look at this particular situation. And then you are doing something which may actually be of benefit for yourself in the long run, even for the other person. How do we do this? What is going on here? Now, one of the biggest problem with other people, especially if they do things that upset us, is that we tend to take things personally. Yeah, people say something bad to you, you can't say that to me. Yeah, it's to me. It's the me thing which is the problem. Yeah, and the problem. So if we can depersonalize this and make this into something which is not a personal thing, we have resolved a large part of the problem already. So when someone says something to you which is unpleasant, when someone does something even which is unpleasant, remember that it's got nothing to do with you. It's about the other person. They are reacting to their own inner conditioning here. They are reacting to the causes and effects that have influenced them through a whole life. And now it is coming out in a certain way here. It is not about you. It's about them. You happen to be there at the wrong place at the wrong time, yeah? And somehow maybe that kind of got triggered in your presence. Maybe they would probably say you triggered it. That's kind of irrelevant. The point is certain conditions and things come together, and that is why it happened. It's about them. It's their problem. It's not your problem. And by remembering that, by depersonalizing it, by not making it a personal problem, but actually seeing it that actually it is their conditioning which is actually coming out, suddenly it doesn't feel so bad anymore. Yeah. Because you know they are the ones who have the problem. And in fact, what happens when you understand that they are the ones who have the problem is that instead of getting upset about it because it's about you, it starts to be about them. And then you're actually able to have compassion for them instead. Why is that? Because they, if they have a bad temper or they say bad things or whatever, they are the first person who have to feel the pain of that state of mind which is negative, those defilements or whatever it is. Yeah, they are the first victim of their own stupidity. And because they are the first victim of their own stupidity, they are the one who actually have the most problems. So you can start to have compassion. And what is so beautiful about this is that when we look at these things from a selfish point of perspective, from our own perspective, that selfish perspective is a very tight perspective. Yeah. It's a very kind of small perspective. It's about me and my world, and you feel opposed. Your little world is opposed to the world of others, and you actually lock yourself into this small little room inside of yourself, and it's very narrow, it's very confined, and actually a lot of suffering comes from that. But when you instead open up, and you start to see other people in a different way, you start to have compassion for other people, etc., actually you are expanding your mind out. It's a far better state of mind, so much more conducive to happiness and well-being, rather than the narrow state of mind where you're just focusing on yourself. It's so beautiful. You understand that instead of thinking about, no, it's really unfair, it's bad, this is what everyone wants to think, actually that itself is a state of suffering, and you don't really want to be there. So learning how to deal with others in this way is a very, very useful thing. And all of this is rooted in one of the very profound teachings of Buddhism. This is called the teaching of non-self, which many of you may have heard of. Those of you who are new, you're the first time here, yeah? Okay, so this is one of the most profound teaching of Buddhism, yeah? So don't worry too much about this. This is called the teaching of non-self. The idea is simply that there is no essence to people. There's no inherent essence to us. There's no kind of soul or kind of stable thing which always guides you in the right way. We are basically, a person is the sum total of all the conditions that have worked on you over your whole life, and in Buddhism also in past lives as well. That's what we are. So your personality right now is all of the things that have worked on you in the past. And we are, in a sense, trapped by that personality. Yeah, you can't step out of your personality. If you try to step out of your personality, then you might end up in the mental hospital instead. Yeah, that's kind of getting very scary. So please don't try that, because that's kind of that's going too far. So we are, in a sense, trapped by our personality, and all we can do is develop it in a certain way. Other people too are trapped in their personality, and when you get that, you can start to have compassion for them. These are very powerful teachings. These are teachings I have used in my throughout my own monastic life to overcome negativity and anger. And it's just amazing the difference. Over, I've been a monk now for 23 years. Yeah, doesn't seem long at all. Actually, seems like I started yesterday. But anyway, 23 years. I've been in Perth all the time. And the difference is enormous. Yeah, gradual movement away from anger towards more compassion and care and having kind of time for other people, all of these things. These days, I very rarely get upset with anything because I understand it's about the other person, not about me. And then it actually makes things so simple, so much better and so much more conducive to harmony and all these other kind of things. The last thing I just want to mention very briefly is also the idea about being honest about ourselves. Yeah, it is one thing is to have compassion for others when they do bad things, and that should not be a superiority trip. Yeah, I am really, you know, these, you know, I have compassion for them because they're really inferior. That's kind of the wrong way. that doesn't work. So when you have compassion, you realize you are also in the same boat. You have the same problem. So the beautiful thing about it is you have compassion for yourself at the same time. But one of the last thing is really to be open as you possibly can about your own problems and to be honest about yourself. Yeah, it is only when we are honest about ourselves, about who we really are, what our problems are, that we're actually able to develop beyond those problems. Yeah, so that self-honesty is a very important thing. And sometimes people will criticize you. Yeah, sometimes they will criticize you in a harsh way, and of course then often we tend to forget about it because we realize they have the problem. But sometimes they might kind of tell you in a friendly way, try to correct you or something like that. And often, not often, but sometimes it can be really worthwhile listening to the criticism of others, especially if it comes from a good place. Yeah, if it comes from a kind of like a grandfather or someone like your grandmother trying to kind of help you out. And the Buddha, he went so far as to say, when someone criticizes you, when someone kind of tells you about a flaw in your character, you should see it as a gift, as a treasure. That's what he said. Yeah, you should say, hooray, thank you for the treasure. And why? Yeah, you have done bad. Oh, thank you so much. Why is that? And the reason is very simple. The reason is because sometimes it is so hard to see our own faults. Yeah, our own faults are so close to us that it takes somebody else to be able to point it out and say, listen, dear friend, there is this little problem. And then you actually listen. You take it on board. You ask yourself, is it true? If it's not true, just throw it out. But if there is some truth to it, then thank you. Oh, thank you so much. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Now I can do something about it. Yeah? And I can try to change my ways. So if you do, if you think like that, at least occasionally, and if you use some of these ideas I just talked about today, it's a very, very good chance that you will grow in your spiritual practice over a long period of time. And then when you come back next time around, like Christmas next year, you will find something has changed. Yeah, and some of your faces, I know some of you have been coming in for years and years and years, and what a wonderful thing that is. I love it when people come back for year after year, because the spiritual path is something which develops gradually. Even if I have given the same talk here 10 times in a row, every time the talk sounds a little bit different. Why? Because you have changed, because I have changed, because the relationship between us has changed, and then you grow gradually. So I don't know if I will be here again next year, but if I do, I hope you come again. I see you again next year, and then I will ask you specifically whether you have grown from last year, and then we can maybe discuss this in more detail. Anyway, is that, anyone want to ask? We've got 2 minutes left. Yeah, Doug. Yeah. But anyone want to say anything about that? Does it make sense what I've been talking about, or is it is not complete? Anyone thinks it's complete nonsense? No. Okay. Yeah. Okay. People are always very polite. Yeah, they don't want to. That's wonderful.
But sometimes it's your view on that person, not their view, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you might expect them to behave a certain way, and yet they can't see themselves acting like that.
Yeah.
That's
going to be a bang in your head. Yeah. Yeah. So Yeah, exactly. But the part of the problem is the expectation. Yeah.
Yes.
And because it's very hard to make other people change.
Yeah.
And one of the ways I like to think about that is that I think about myself, how hard it is to change myself. How can I expect other people to change if I can't even change my blooming self? Yeah. So of course you are careful. So be careful of the expectations of others.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to let go of those expectations in certain relationships because people are so close to us. But that's where it is. A lot of the solution is in letting go of expectations and accepting people for what they are. It's hard, but that's a big part of the solution. Yeah. Okay, then, I'll pass the microphone on to you.
Beautiful,
thank you. Thank you very much, Adrian, for coming tonight. And on behalf of the Amarao group, meditation group, I'd like to say thank you very much to you and the rest of the Sangha for the past year and coming here and leading us through meditations and guidance. Thank you very much, and I hope you're all happy and well through next year. Thank you.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.